North South Wrestling Podcast Network. Welcome back to the year that was. Thank you so much for your downloads. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you for all the feedback from last week. The positive feedback was awesome. The negative feedback was great as well. I was a little surprised by the amount of anti-Canadian slurs that were hurled at me. But, I mean, it is what it is. You put yourself out there, right? So we're here. Week number two. Entry number two in the greatest WWE pay-per-view year of all time. We started last week with the worst year of all time, which was 1995, and we are continuing this week. But before we get started, I just want to thank everyone again, not just for supporting this show, but for everyone who has taken the time to jump over and help us out at the North South Wrestling Podcast Network. Your downloads have been amazing. If you've subscribed, amazing. If you give us a rating, that would help us boost our numbers too. So tell us what kind of content you'd like to hear more, North South Wrestling Podcast Network. It's a bit of a mouthful at times, but so far it's been a lot of fun to do. So, without any further ado, let's get to the second worst pay-per-view year of all time. Of 35, this finished number 34. And I'll be honest, this is that place. You know that place Michael Cole talks about? You know, where people go and they have like that far-off look into the crowd. And they just, it's that place, you know? There's no other word to describe it other than that. That place. Randy Orton goes there. I believe Brock Lesnar's gone there when he wasn't the Lunatic Fringe. That place. A year where there is nothing going on, and the choices are as baffling as they are ineffectual. The second worst pay-per-view year of all time. 2010. Now, I'll be honest, I was hoping this one would finish last, as it was at the dirt worst to sit through. It was not fun at all. And I mean, there's interminable years, right? Like I would put in years like 2018, 2017, 2019 as really interminable to sit through. But especially on second watch, on first watch, it's fine. But at least those ones have really high-end match quality across the board. So if nothing else, you can sit back and kind of enjoy the athleticism. And what I think is interesting about 2010 is it's also one of the first years where, and this is a problem throughout the 2010s, is the talent level is potentially the highest it's ever been. It's so incredible, and they can't put it together and put on great shows, great storylines. And it's 2010, it sucks especially because it turns out it starts off so well. Like, I would say into WrestleMania, you're like, wow, this is actually going to be a great year. And then it turns into just a colossal disappointment. I mean, Vince McMahon Sr. would look at 2010 and be like, wow, there's something more disappointing than my son. So I'm thinking for this one, there's a couple through lines I'd like to look at. The first one is, I think it's a year of failed experiments. And I'm not sure, and it's all because they don't go all in on them. Specifically, you got Sheamus as a pretty big experiment at the beginning of the year. Comes in at the end of 2009, wins the title kind of almost out of nowhere. And he starts the year and he wins the title twice in this year. So I think he's a pretty big experiment here. It's a shameful thing. And the other one is the Nexus. Another big experiment that, for whatever reason, when we'll talk about it, they didn't want to pull the trigger on. The other through lines is there's a decision they make. And I don't remember exactly when they make it, but they make it during this year, and it's the decision to go with The Miz as the top heel in the company for a while. That on its own would not be the worst thing, because Miz is talented, he's a good talker, but the problem is that they do it at the expense of guys that are better. So I think there's an interesting dichotomy between how they treat Miz and how they treat CM Punk throughout this year. And one of them is clearly able to handle the pressures and the main event level, and one is not. And they go with the one who is not, which I think is interesting. So that'll be a through line as well. And then the final one is, I don't know what to call it other than Cena wins LOL. I hate LOL. You know what I hate? I hate when people say LOL, like in person, like, oh my god, I LOL'd, I lolled at that. No, it's a computer thing. I don't tolerate it on the computer. That's why I never write LOL. I write ha 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 ha, or whatever it is I write. But it's not just that he wins matches, because he loses matches also. It's that nothing affects him. And this is a big problem. And it's a major problem considering the company is built around him. So we're going through the categories again, which made this, which made up my list of the greatest or worst pay-per-view years of all time. And the first category is match quality based on star ratings. This is a year that's kind of mired in mediocrity. There's a lot of good matches, but there's very few great, and that's what kills the year. There's two great matches in the whole year, by my account. Two, in 13 shows. So out of 13 shows, you got two matches that are great, and both of them happened by WrestleMania. So after WrestleMania, you've got, 8 months of television and pay-per-view where there's nothing going on and nothing great. And that makes the year feel interminable because you're seeing endless rematches. You're seeing matches between guys that don't really have a great chemistry. And it's really hurt. It's really hurt by choices they make later on when you're dealing with Kane and Undertaker fighting, Orton and Sheamus. And if I may, a word on Orton. He's having an awful year. And Orton is someone I've come to really appreciate in the past years. But I'm starting to think that Christian, as much as I've never been a fan of him, I'm not going to talk about guys I hate. As much as I've never been a fan of Christian, I think Christian was almost like the unlocking of Orton. He was good before and he had great things. But if you look at 09 and 2010, I think Orton has terrible years. And 2010 especially, he's pushed at pretty much the Cena level. He's as hot as he ever is as a face, and he has a terrible year to back that up. And the matches, again, feel interminable, and I think he's saved by being the worst wrestler of the year by something else that kind of happens later on. The worst match of the year, my pick for the 12th worst match of all time, it's from the WrestleMania. It's Vincent Kennedy McMahon against Bret the Hitman Hart. It had a really good build. I thought this match had a really good build. It was a good feud. I mean, it had history, and Vince could still somewhat bring it as a promo. Bret was surprisingly good as the promos also. I think they went all in on Bret in a lot of ways because of this year. They made him U.S. champ, which is strange. But there's a lot of problems with this match. I mean, first of all, Bret is dressed like a teenager, which is strange. I could see him like rolling down on a skateboard. And Vince looks as old as he's ever looked with that stupid haircut. I don't know what happened when Trump cut his hair. I don't know if Trump put his like Trump magic on him and his hair just never grew in right. But it took forever to grow back to the pompadour that it was when he was at his height as Mr. McMahon. And I like to consider his height Mr. McMahon when he's fighting Shawn Michaels and God, because that was when he was at his craziest. But his head looks round like a peanut. It's strange. His head looks too small for his body with this haircut. And I hope he understands that and realizes that a man who's so obsessed with size, like, you better work out that head because it's tiny. And this is a match, too, between Bret and Vince that should have been 10 seconds long. Did we really need the family soap opera to start this off? The Harts and the McMahons are not exactly the Montagues and the Capulets, all right? There's no sense in, like, this whole drama and drawn out, so you got your money, eh? Everybody got their money, yeah? Well, we know the Harts take their money in advance. Stupid. Waste of time. And I'll believe there's no way Vince McMahon was happy with what Bruce Hart was wearing in this match. There's no way he shook his hand backstage. There's no way he didn't try to make him shit his pants or something. Like, Bruce Hart looks like a freaking hobo. And, like, why on earth was no one helping Vince McMahon? Like, 2 years, sorry, 3 years prior, he had, like, an army of guys to fight Bobby Lindsay. And here, he can't get DX out to bury the Harts? You can't get Rick Rude's bones to come out and fucking dance around or something? Sidebar, my wife recently told me that she wants chickens, which I'm really happy about. I'm actually very excited about that. But I wanted them as long as there's a rooster, because I want to name the rooster Ravishing Rick Rooster. And she's not into getting a rooster. She says it's too loud, it's going to bully the others, the city doesn't want people to have roosters, which is preposterous. It's a circle of life, you need roosters. So for me, the whole thing's off the table. And I like eggs, and that's the principle. It's the principle, I can't do it. Anyway, Bret and Vince sucked. Let's get to something better. Top five matches of the year. I think number five was The Undertaker versus Rey Mysterio from the Royal Rumble, World Heavyweight title. I think it's a really cool, weird styles clash, but it worked, surprisingly. Taker is an interesting case throughout this year because he's involved with the best stuff and a lot of the worst stuff. So it's a typical Taker year. Number four, CM Punk versus Rey Mysterio from Over the Limit. This is the one where Punk finally gets his head shaved. Again, I think these two have a really great feud throughout. And it's an actual feud where people are trying to... it's not just a series of matches. Like, Punk's trying to get Mysterio to join. He's harassing his son. He's singing happy birthday to him. I think Punk getting his head shaved was good, too. And then so and the matches were all good. They're all at least good, very good, bordering on great. Number three. Sheamus versus John Morrison, ladder match from TLC. Now, Sheamus, again, is a guy who didn't have a great year, and Morrison's always solid. But I feel like this was a nice, out-of-nowhere, really solid match that really played to both guys' strengths. Morrison's really good at kind of the spinning and hyper spots, and Sheamus is a really good base. And if they kept to those in all their other matches, they both of them are pretty unstoppable. Number two is the 2010 Royal Rumble. We'll talk about that later, but I think it's almost a masterpiece. And the number one match of 2010, what I have is the 46th best match of all time. At WrestleMania, the main event, The Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels, career versus streak. I don't think it's as good as their match from the year before, but I think it's really epic. It's really interesting. And I think both guys have a really great showing. And I especially love the jumping tombstone from Undertaker to finally bury Michaels. I think it's really interesting, too, that Michaels has this guy that he could never beat. Mr. I Won't Lay Down for Anybody. I know he beat him he beat him the first couple times. Like, he beat him in the casket match, and he beat him in the Hell in a Cell. But ever since then, nothing. And even those wins were kind of empty. So that's my best match of the year. Moving on now to characters. I have this category 30th out of 35. And this is where you really see how hollow the characters are. Let's talk about the best character of the year first, because everybody else kind of... Well, there's two that are really good, I guess. The best character of the year for me is probably whining Batista. I don't know what his problem is, what happened to him to make him like this, but Mr. No One Appreciates Me, Mr. You're going to be kissing fat chicks and babies. That's the Batista I want on TV all the time. Sadly, he went away after the first 3 months, but I think he was the strongest character of the year. And then you got CM Punk, who's also has an incredible character year. But then you get to everybody who's got like one characteristic. So you get Kofi Kingston, fake Jamaican. You get Jack Swagger, possibly mentally challenged athlete. You got Miz. He's like the obnoxious guy who just kind of clotheslines and hangs on the rope. He's come to play, but he's obnoxious. He says awesome a lot. I don't really know what's up with him. But he does that weird walk as though he's almost a bushwhacker, but without the arms. You got Bret Hart, brain damaged Canadian. That's not really fair. He's not really brain damaged. He just can't move. And then you have like living Banshee Melina. It's just not a good year for characters. Characters don't exist. And again, I want to contrast Punk and Miz. Like, who is Miz? Punk, okay, he's a straight-edge guy. He wants you to improve your life. He wants everybody to improve their lives. He wants everybody to join him. He clearly thinks he's superior. He clearly is actually coming from a place of trying to help, even though there's an arrogance to it. So there's some depth to this. Who is Miz? He's annoying. He was on a reality show. He's not a great wrestler at this point. Who is he? What is he? Where is he? A lot of W's. I also want to point out Cody Rhodes, which I think it's towards the end of this year, moving into the next one. But Cody Rhodes is a really interesting guy. Of everything they ever gave this guy, he took and made it better than it should have been. So they make him dashing Cody Rhodes, and they smash his face, and he turns it into basically Dr. Doom. And I think that's a really cool move to do on his part. He does it later with the mustache, and he's always pretty good at making chicken salad out of the garbage they gave him. And Laycool are decent characters also. The problem with them is they just can't back that up in the ring at all. And which brings me to... I have two characters that I think really hurt the year. The first is John Cena. Again, I will never debate that John Cena isn't capable of great matches and great things. Because he is. And in fact, throughout this project, no one has more great matches than John Cena. No one, period. He also has the benefit of being on very close to the most pay-per-views. For instance, he's like on almost double the pay-per-views Bret Hart is. You know, he's almost triple Randy Savage. But his matches are great. You can't deny it. It's what he is. And I enjoy watching him. But his character's not good. And it's because invincible characters are impossible to get behind. It's really difficult. And it's not just that he wins matches. Again, it's that he shakes everything off. It really hurts the promotion. And then people get dragged in. I mean, Wade Barrett, got some bad news for you, Wade. You're boring as shit, but you're worse when you get into that Cena orbit, right? Everyone who kind of comes into contact with him falls into like a character gulf, like, except for Batista, who kind of succeeded through that. And he's just indicative of the whole thing. There's nobody that's really a character outside of what they do in their matches. There's no character to Rey Mysterio or Kofi Kingston. They're just guys that are there. And Cena's just a guy that's there, but also is invincible. The worst character, though, in the whole year, though, has got to be heel Michael Cole on commentary. I get they were trying to do something new, having the heel be the play-by-play guy. And maybe he was being fed all of his things, but his commentary actually hurts the matches. What's that you say? Matt Stryker also sucked on commentary? I won't necessarily disagree with you that Matt Stryker has his limitations on commentary. But Michael Cole does him no favors this year. And neither does King or anyone else they're with. There's many times where Matt Stryker will try to make a point on commentary. He'll try to say like, King, what does it feel like when you're in a headlock like that? And King or Cole or someone will reply like, well, you never felt it or you never knew, as opposed to actually going with it and adding analysis to the match. And then Michael Cole also hurts by just constantly shitting on characters. We'll get to that later when we talk about Daniel Bryan. But like, it's not helpful at all. Like, Vince McMahon was actually a master of commentary in that he would talk about the things that made the faces great faces, but he would also talk about the things that made heels great heels. He would get you to like the faces more and he'd get you to hate the heels more, which is exactly what the commentator should do. Michael Cole seems to be out to make you feel stupid for liking certain people, and that's not helpful to anything. WrestleMania 26, we had JT and I, and we ranked them on No Holds Barred, had it as the 22nd out of 35 WrestleMania. And look, it's carried almost entirely by Taker Michaels. It has the worst match of the year we talked about earlier with Bret and Vince. But there's some interesting other parts in it, too. Buried amongst everything is a really good Jericho Edge match. It's kind of a forgotten match because, I mean, when you look at the card, it really does. I would say it's, of the matches we're going to talk about, it's the least important, because I believe Batista Cena, I think it under delivers, but it's still really good. I really like it. And Punk Mysterio have their worst match, but it's still Punk Mysterio, so it's still really good. So I think this Jericho Edge match gets even buried behind those, because at least Punk Mysterio led to like this feud that we remember and is memorable, and Batista Cena is Batista Cena. So you forget that Jericho and Match had a pretty well built up match that came from their tag. It came from Edge winning the Rumble, and it's a solid match in there. And then, like I said, Punk Mysterio is good. Batista Cena under delivers, but is good. I think it has, up until that point, the worst Mania Money in the Bank, with the worst Money in the Bank winner, maybe ever. Maybe Sandow's worse. I guess we could probably do a list of that at some point. But he's not a good Money in the Bank winner, Jack Swagger, especially not at this point. And then you got Triple H beating the new guy, which is, you know, it's what he does. So WrestleMania 26, a good but not great Mania. Looking at the world title storylines. So at the start of the year, the World Heavyweight Champion is The Undertaker. WWE Champion is, like we talked about earlier, it's Sheamus. So they do try a bunch of things this year with the world title in terms of storylines. Now, they go to Cena Batista for Mania, and it's good, and I love the storyline. They just get there in the clumsiest way possible. And it goes to devaluing a match like the Royal Rumble. Like, what's the point of having a Royal Rumble match if people are just going to be given title shots after? I suppose it also hurts that, like, there's an Elimination Chamber right after also. But you go from Sheamus to Cena to Batista all in one night, which is the Elimination Chamber, just so Cena can win at Mania, which is strange. I mean, I guess they just wanted to do Cena-Batista, so they got there. But it was working. And I could have lived with heel Batista running that division for the rest of the year. I think I would have been fine. Their rematches, for me, varying degrees of success. I can't make up my mind on the Last Man Standing. I don't like Last Man Standing matches in general. But on one hand, I hate the ending. I hate him tying him up and just kind of letting it count it down with the duct tape around his feet around the pole. But by the same token, I've constantly been an advocate for, I wish they did things that just make sense. And it does make sense that you just tied someone up. In fact, that's what Randy Savage did in the first false count. Was it a last man standing? Oh, it was false count anywhere. But at WrestleMania 10, he ties up Crush, right? So I'm really torn. I don't know what it is about it that doesn't make me dislike it more. I like the I Quit match too. It's good. I don't think it's great, but it's good. And I just think their whole thing is the matches, they're your typical John Cena gimmick matches, so I think they're a little bit nonsense. But it's really carried by some great character work from Batista. On the other side of the coin, you have Sheamus and Orton, who later on will become two of my favorite guys. But their feud, it just feels interminable. It starts at the Rumble. And these guys are like a low-key Rock Undertaker, which is kind of like a low-key Ted DiBiase, which is like a low-key Juliet Capulet, Paris Aeschylus. Like, they have no chemistry. They have horrible, horrible chemistry. And every title match they have in 2010 is a snooze fest. I want to say it's maybe just they're not playing up to their strengths. Like, Orton can be really great, or he can be... He's usually better when he's in there with someone a bit smaller, you know? And Sheamus is actually the same, so they're kind of similar size. They're both maybe better carried by somebody else, and here they have to carry each other. And they fight two times in a single match and once in a fatal four-way, and it's too much. But they're not the worst feud of the year, not for the world title, because we got 3 months of Kane versus The Undertaker in 2010 for the World Heavyweight Championship. Kane wins the Money in the Bank, cashes in. Cool, I like that they did it on the night of. They'd never done that before. But then we get that series of The Undertaker, the no DQ, the Hell in a Cell, and the Buried Alive. And the Buried Alive is awful, and so is the Hell in a Cell. It's too much for these guys at this prior period of the career. I don't mind Kane getting a title run here. I question it a little bit in terms of match quality when you've got better guys on the roster that can carry it. CM Punk, for example. But then again, I wouldn't trade the CM Punk stuff we get later, so whatever, hindsight's 2020. But Kane and Undertaker, they should have known in the moment that it wasn't going to be great. You get Cena and Barrett. It's not for the title, but it's a main event match with no stakes, and this is where the problem with John Cena's character comes in. And they tie into Randy Orton, who is arguably at his hottest as a face. And it culminates with Cena getting fired when he's the referee and Wade Barrett doesn't win. But again, it's the problem with the character. You can't get into these storylines if there's no consequences. So John Cena gets fired, the next night on Raw does a speech, and then the following week he's back attacking people in the ring. And by the next month, he's dumping a million chairs on Wade Barrett to celebrate and with his hands in the white supremacist sign in the air, you know? So, Cena-Barrett, it's a main event feud for no titles, but it doesn't do anybody any favors. And then the world title ends up at the end with Miz, who won the Money in the Bank. And, okay, you know, you want to go with someone new. I want to say Miz, at this point, Miz is maybe the worst Money in the Bank cash-in guy. I don't know, Jack Swagger's worse, but Miz is up there. And he is at his hottest. But, like, look, you can upset the girl in the crowd and make her do that grumpy face. But it's easy. You know how many women I've upset with my behavior? Tons, okay? A shitload. Why? I want a rooster? It's not a big deal, okay? Sometimes I upset my wife just to see how she'll react. That's fine, okay? But it's not a hard thing to do. Women hate men, especially attractive men, like Miz and myself. I'm not attractive. Miz is pretty attractive. I have a friend named Ivan, and he looks exactly like Miz. And he's a very attractive man. World Heavyweight title by the end of the year ends up on Edge. WWE on Miz. Not a great year for storylines. Mid-card storylines. I have it ranked 24th out of 25th. So at the start of the year, U.S. champion is Miz, and I think this is a great place for him. I think it's a really interesting place for him and his character. However, the Intercontinental is held by a man who holds another title, that of the most boring man on earth, and that's Drew McIntyre. Now, in 2020, Drew McIntyre is awesome. He's gained in intensity. He's learned how to work a bit better style. He doesn't do as many boring things. He looks like a star. Here, he looks like a skinny Gaston. Now, Gaston, if you don't know who this is the hero of Beauty and the Beast. He, the lone man, trying to save a town from a disgusting beast. And despite the fact being constantly spurned by this ungrateful woman named Belle. So, Drew McIntyre is a skinny Gaston with the hair and the white tights and the Scottish symbol on the side. But all his matches are terrible. It's really not a fun thing to watch. I don't think he has a great match in 2010. I don't know if he has a good match in 2010. And then you got a kind of the emergence of guys like Kofi Kingston. R-Truth is coming back, and that's interesting. You get the tail end of MVP. But none of these guys are really given focus or feuds. They have, again, they have matches. Dolph Ziggler's in there too. Dolph Ziggler's always up for a good time in the ring too. Probably out of the ring. I bet Dolph Ziggler might be showing off too much, but I think he might be a good guy to hang out with. Seems like a nice and a funny guy. What else happens in the mid-card? You got the shocking explosion of Crime Time. Comes to a head in a strap match. I know I was demanding a strap match between Shad, Gaspard, and JTG. And when I thought of them, as soon as I saw them, I was like, yes, put these guys in a strap match. And it was everything I'd hoped and dreamed. Yeah. You get the brand supremacy fight at Bragging Rights. I mean, nothing says I'm putting the best of my brand forward like Ezekiel Jackson and Tyler Rex defending the honor. How do people, they come onto the show, they're on the show for a month, and they're already acting as though like they have this emotional connection to it. Oh, yeah, I've always been a Raw guy. No, you haven't, all right? You're an indie guy, all right? You're terrible, okay? Where is Ezekiel Jackson from? The Philippines? No, I don't know. It was, no, and Tyler Rex always just looked dirty. Like a dirty man who walked off, maybe a homeless guy. It's probably because I've seen a lot of homeless guys look like Tyler Rex, probably not as big or as muscular, but the dreads, it's the dreads. And the mid-card has really helped as soon as Daniel Bryan gets there. Not from a character perspective, because he doesn't have any character at this point, except his character is that he's a loser and a geek and a nerd. And you shouldn't like him, and you're stupid. Thanks, Michael Cole. Way to get this guy over who's having consistently excellent matches. But every single match he's in from Night of Champions on when he wins the United States Championship is a highlight of the show. If he's there the whole year, he's for sure the wrestler of the year. And the whole year is way better if he's there. But Daniel Bryan really helps when he comes in. He's a good surprise at SummerSlam, at the SummerSlam as well. The biggest problem with the mid-card is the sacrifice of the Straight Edge Society. It goes to a greater question about how they've never been able to tell the story of an indoctrinating group properly. It's the same problem they have years later with the Wyatt family. And I get the fear is that they're going to end up diluted like the NWO. But there's a big difference between the NWO, which is essentially a gang, and the Straight Edge Society, or the Wyatt family, which is a group that wins people over through philosophy and ideology. Right? I guess the NWO had an ideology. It was too sweet and for life. But these groups had more of a "we're going to save you" aspect to it, and this is where I wish the company would take more chances. Marvel Comics years ago based a whole storyline called the House of M on the Scarlet Witch, and it's before the movies, before the third Olsen was a thing, or anybody's fantasy, or this beautiful woman that like we wish would live with us and be with us, and just, you know, look in our heart and see that we just really want to be with them. If they took chances on smaller characters, and she should take chances on men that love her, but they took chances on smaller characters, and they would tell stories that had variety as a consequence. Same thing when they did the Infinity Gauntlet years ago. People knew who he was, but no one gave a shit about Adam Warlock, but he suddenly became this important character for the year they're telling the Infinity Gauntlet, and then you kind of, maybe the next year he's not as important. But WWE doesn't do that. They never do that. It's John Cena every year. It's Roman Reigns every year, on top of the promotion. Once they have their guy, they have their guy. Now, there's no reason you can't push more than one person at once, but apparently they can't. So what you could do with a storyline like this is have people join it and make the whole year about people joining until someone finally... The great thing with a cult storyline, which is what this is, right? It's a cult, is that once you beat the leader, the cult can be like almost broken from his spell because he's been shown to be a fraud or whatever. So it's actually a story that pretty much writes itself, but they never do it for whatever reason. Same thing with Bray Wyatt in 2013. Let the Straight Edge Society beat people, have them join, have them pledge, or whatever it is, have them venerate CM Punk until he's finally defeated. He can almost take over the entire promotion. And hell, if you want, have John Cena beat him. It doesn't matter, as long as somebody beats him, and as long as they become a focal point of the story, because they're the only ones actually telling a story in the whole year. WWE right now tells the same story every single year. Every single year it's the same story. Someone wins the Royal Rumble, challenge at Mania. Every single year, right? Then there's a series of rematches. Every single time there's a Money in the Bank, it's the same story. They've been selling the same story with the Money in the Bank since 2005, where it's almost always on a heel, and they're just waiting for them to be at the most vulnerable, and then they take it. And then Undertaker challenges the person in the fall. They always have the person who challenges every year. Lately, it's Samoa Joe in the summer and Braun Strowman in the fall. It used to be the Undertaker. 2002, 2003, 2010, 2004. Does he fight JBL at SummerSlam, doesn't he? He's always challenging for the title in there. Same thing year after year. Here you had something different. Okay? And they fed the fucking cult to Big Show. All right? As though Big Show was a tiger and the WWE was that bitch Carol Baskins. End of the year, Daniel Bryan's U.S. champion. Intercontinental's Dolph Ziggler, and that's a good thing. Tag team storyline, I had 35 out of 35. The year starts with DX in their, God, their worst possible form, dominating a division. And then we lost Crime Time. And I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do to the tag division without Crime Time, right? What are you going to do? So the tag division is left without, with Crime Time done, the Hart Dynasty has to pick it up. They fight Jericho and his partners. And I mean, if Crime Time was there, it'd be Crime Time City, you know? Crime Time Village, Crime Time Hamlet. The Usos debut this year, which is cool, but they're not very, they don't really do anything with them yet. And how could you? The division clearly so upset about the loss of Crime Time. Crime Time, I mean, I don't want to say this was a racist gimmick, but Crime Time, I could see how someone might look at it that way, you know? It might be a little bit racist, Crime Time. Anyway, Crime Time is not there. And then the tag division kind of, without, with the loss of Crime Time, it kind of just dissolves into Slater Gabriel or John Cena and David Otunga. Because, you know, the tag division needed John Cena ruining it in the absence of Crime Time. And we end with Morella and Kozlov as tag champions, which I guess is fine. They're good for their skits, but they're no Crime Time. Women's storyline, I have 23 out of 29. And it's entirely, they do their best with Lay Cool. And it's the whole Piggy James stuff. So it's preposterous. Like one of the more beautiful women in company history, Mickie James, being shamed for her weight by the Undertaker's wife, the woman who replaced Sarah Undertaker, is now upset with Mickie James's. I mean, Trish Stratus was into Mickie James, and I saw it in her eyes. I saw it all the time when they kissed, right? I saw it at WrestleMania 22. They edited it out, but I saw it. I saw what happened. I saw the flush. It was beautiful. But yeah, she's not a pig. She's beautiful. She married Nick Aldis, right? Magnus. But yeah, so this is strange. It's a strange storyline they tell with her being fat. I mean, look, the women's division here, it's Melina, it's Eve Fox, it's Eve Torres, Alicia Fox, Marisa, Gail Kim, and then this is when she was upset about everything, right? She's upset about, I think she said there was some racial inequity, which is fine. I mean, we all saw Crime Time, but yeah, she's really no good. You get Layla defending against Kelly at some points. It's a whole thing, and Lay Cool dominates the division until Natalya kills them dead at Survivor Series. Look, I can see thinking the women is like a separate entity than the rest of the thing, and I get it, but I think this year in particular, it's a year that actually hurts the product overall. The stories aren't good. In fact, they're borderline offensive, and the talent in-ring is just not there. I remember liking Michelle McCool at different points, but not in this year. And Natalya hasn't grown into what she is. She's not the mom of the division yet. Royal Rumble! And this is the category that saves 2010 from being last. The Royal Rumble match is incredible. An incredible match that I even hoped would be better on rewatch. It even let me down a little bit. That's how much I remember it being amazing. But it's great. And it's carried by Shawn Michaels and CM Punk. Now, of course, Triple H has to come out and ruin the CM Punk show. And imagine, this is like the least egregious ruining of CM Punk by Triple H. So, figure that one out. I'm glad Triple H got kicked in the face by that weak link of DX. Like, imagine in 1997, Shawn Michaels being the weak link to Triple H. Like, Triple H just wishes he had the desperation that Michaels could convey in the match. And it's just a great match. It tells a great story. You get the Beth Phoenix spot, and then Punk knees her in the head. Wait, was Punk dating her? Is this a domestic dispute? A special domestic dispute match! I guess she just cheated on him with Kali, so it's fine if he need her in the head. Imagine being cheated on with Great Kali. Like, man. Anyway, this match is very deep. It's deep on many levels. It comes down to a surprise entrant Edge, Batista, Michaels, and John Cena. And the elimination of Michaels by Batista, who's the perfect guy to eliminate him, is brilliant, just by the tips of his fingers. And just when you expect Cena to win, because, you know, Cena wins, LOL, Edge prevails. It's a great story. It's a great match. It is punctuated with some really awful acting by Michaels after he leaves. Where he just stares. Maybe he's going to that place. No one says it, but he stares. And then he jumps around. Like, he jumps and... Oh! Throws his fist in the air. Come on! He's pulling at his face. Oh! Oh! He might as well be shaking his fist. It's really poor acting at the end. But throughout the match, it was good. And it's funny. It's interesting. 2010, Edge would return a decade later as a surprise entrant as well. After a decade of absence. Historical importance, JT and I rated it 29th out of 35, so you're looking at not great. I mean, you get the Michaels retirement, you get the Nexus, you get the return of Bret Hart, the Miz winning, because Miz ends up being a main event guy, I guess, but nothing crazy that really happens here. The debut of Sheamus, the surprise rise of Sheamus, and then we get SummerSlam. I had it 29 out of 33. And this is, again, something that hurts it. I mean, it should hurt it. It's not a fun SummerSlam. But allow me to say that there's nothing absolutely horrible on this thing. Now, according to, I don't want to throw around the word credit. I don't want to throw around incredible too much. But according to Cameron of the Funkadactyls, the greatest match of all time takes place on this card, which is Melina versus Alicia Fox. And look, Steve Austin can look at her in shock and surprise all he wants, but this is one woman's opinion, okay? And if recent events have taught me anything, it's that we got to believe women, okay? And I got to believe her that Melina versus Alicia Fox is one of the greatest matches of all time. Yeah, Big Show squashing the hottest heel stable in the company. A good opener with Dolph and Kofi Kingston, but then it's ruined by the Nexus running in, which is fine if you're going to put over the Nexus in the main event. And this show is really hurt by the senseless burial of the Nexus. It's got a lot of warts. Bret Hart not understanding the disqualification rule, stuff like that, but it's still a good match. But the problem becomes when Nexus goes up 2-0 on Cena, DDT him on the floor, and he still jumps around and beats them and acts like nothing's happening. The stable's dead in the water, and a chance to make something interesting turns out to be just Cena winning again. And you hear stories about Jericho and Edge talking later about how they begged John Cena to not do that, and he still said, yeah, I'm going to do it. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know why he would do it, and it really hurts the show. Worst show of the year this year? It was actually quite easy. It was Hell in a Cell. I have it as the out of 395 shows, the 369th best show. Just according to star rankings. Daniel Bryan has the best match on the show against The Miz and John Morrison, triple threat submission, any Falls Count Anywhere match. But then you get John Cena, Wade Barrett, Edge, Swagger, Orton, Sheamus in a Hell in a Cell. I didn't know reason they need a Hell in a Cell for Orton and Sheamus. Michelle McCool, Natalya, which is boring. And Kane and The Undertaker, who fight for 22 minutes in the cell. So just a really terrible show. Best show. But again, kind of an indictment. It's 104th out of 395 in this Royal Rumble. But I think you got some good stuff on there. You have the Rumble match itself, which I think is the fifth best Royal Rumble of all time. But it's also a legitimately great match. You got Undertaker Mysterio. Christian and Ezekiel Jackson, people seem to love. I think it was fine. Ezekiel Jackson is the most nondescript person ever. Miz MVP. Sheamus Orton, man. Sheamus Orton having a bad match. And Michelle McCool and Mickie James. So that was the best show. We're going to finish off, though, with our five worst wrestlers of the year and the five best wrestlers of the year. And look, the five worst wrestlers of the year, I'm just going to throw them all out there because there's no difference between them in my eyes. Alicia Fox, Eve Torres, Layla, Gail Kim, and Maryse. They do nothing all year. They go out there, their matches, every single match has a botch in it or something that exposes the business. And again, I just don't think anything they do is any good. Like, they don't amount to anything good. They don't contribute to anything in the match at all that is good or great. All right. Now, if I were to take the women out, the worst of the year would be Kane. Kane, Wade Barrett, Triple H, Mark Henry. Not to shit on Mark Henry. We don't do that on this show. But the women, it's actually by and large, they carry all the worst matches on almost every show. And it's the exposing the business I just can't get behind. So that's why they're there. Five best wrestlers of the year. Number five, Dolph Ziggler. Ziggler has a fun year. Okay, all of his stuff is good. And it's maybe it's the name, but he gets into a series with Daniel Bryan. He helps with Daniel Bryan later on. He has that match with Kofi at SummerSlam. This guy should have been a future star, fifth of the year. Number four, Chris Jericho. Really good match at WrestleMania. He's fun at the Royal Rumble. He's good in the tag division. He's part of everything that's good. Number three, Kofi Kingston, SOS. Even though he has a nondescript character, all his matches are good and fun. But again, it's an indictment that he is this high based on zero character. But good in the mid-card, always good to have around. Number two, Rey Mysterio. And it's almost entirely on the back of the feud with CM Punk. Which brings me to the number one wrestler of 2010 in the WWE, CM Punk. Now, it's not just the Rey Mysterio, because that's a great series. He really helps that Royal Rumble match. He carries a few with the Big Show. He's good in the four-way matches where he fights for the World Heavyweight title. He's good in everything he does. And you can tell that he's way more equipped to handle the main event heel level than Miz. Maybe they're worried about him getting cheered. I don't know. But it's unquestionable to me that if you were to put the two of them together between CM Punk and Miz, that it shouldn't have been CM Punk getting that push. Again, in a way, I'm happy he didn't, because we got the Summer of Punk the next year. But as a consequence, 2011 finishes way higher in this list, right? So CM Punk being the wrestler of the year, I thought it's cool, it's interesting, and it's a shame they didn't push him harder than he did. So 2010, saved from the last place by the Royal Rumble. And what's particularly crappy about 2010 is, and this is the biggest indictment of 2010, is you could skip everything from the end of WrestleMania 26 until Money in the Bank the following year, and you wouldn't have missed anything of interest or consequence. Do you really need to see Bret Hart hobbling around? Do you need to see an interminable amount of Randy Orton versus Sheamus matches? Do you need to see Wade Barrett fighting John Cena? Do you need to see John Cena overcoming every single odd thrown against him? Nothing happens this year. It's an interminable year filled with pretty crappy matches. 2010, not the most fun. So listen, guys, check out all the great content on the North South Wrestling Podcast Network. Look, we got great shows coming up. We're trying to put out as much content as we can for you guys. We got Extreme Three-Way Dance, Chad Campbell's Fighting Spirit of 06. Chad's also got a great series for the GWCW match, greatest WCW match of all time. Project on PlacetoMeNation.com called Carolina Dreaming. We got Jacob Williams' Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, Jeff Learns Wrestling, JT and I's No Holds Barred, Wrestling Warzone, and a new show that I launched. You probably have heard it already, hopefully, with my buddy Reg, called Montreal to Memphis. Look, check them out. We've got all, check out the Podblast, check out everything that's there. Subscribe, listen to what you think. Please leave us a rating. And listen, if you're running a business at all, or you want to make money on the side or whatever, and you need a bit of help with search engine optimization, our buddy Chris Walker at legit.com has got you covered, right? This is a guy to help you drive awareness to your business, and hopefully, like, you'll be able to grow it to your full potential. He can explain it way better than I can on his site, legit.com. Check it out. He's helping us out here, so I'm happy to throw him some love too. So thank you for listening to The Year That Was. I am Aaron D. Aaron George. You can check me out on Aaron at Aaron D. George on Twitter. Hit me up with comments, feedback, anything you'd like. This was The Year That Was, 2010. Next week, we plunge back to a time where the matches were not so great and the superstar cupboard was as bare as it had ever been. We'll see you then. Let me tell you how I act.
Why would I step through? I give panic a test. You see, I'm always dressed. I stay fresh to death. I'm frequently well-groomed. I'm never a mess. I said you won't see P getting loud in the streets, acting all ghetto with them cheap-ass stilettos. When they wink thaw over, I come through bolder with a crispy-ass shirt and a clutch in my hand. Wearing pants so fierce you can't pronounce the brand. Playing my part, standing next to my man, doing what? Co-signing these speaks. Even though at times I may disagree, you do what? Tell them later, not the time nor the place, 'cause I'm very ladylike and know how to save face. Stand in front of you, tell me I got your back.